Hello and welcome to the Barag Wall Show, the longest running web design podcast, which I don't actually think is a claim to fame. It's more of an embarrassing secret, where we look at user experience design, conversion optimization, and working in the web. On this week's show, we're joined by Sarah Zammer. Sarah, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Lovely to have you on the show. Sarah's from Oxford University, and we're going to discover how she's gone about influencing the user experience of an entire organization with a tiny team. Am I overselling it a bit?
No, Sarah? That's very
true. Exactly.
Huge organization.
It certainly is. So, yeah. My name's Paul Boag, and joining me as always is Marcus Lillington. Hello, Marcus. How are you?
I'm very well, Paul. I feel I don't really have an awful lot to add on this call other than trying, because basically Sarah works with Paul, or Paul works for Sarah. So my role on this show is to embarrass Paul as much as I can in front of his client.
Excellent.
Is that right? I think that's right, isn't it?
That would be in line with our normal track record. So yes, that sounds about right. We need to get one of your clients on, Marcus. That's what we need to do.
I was actually thinking, instant tangent. I was actually thinking, who could I get on the show for the next one? And I've got a few ideas, so we'll talk about that.
So later. I'm so excited to have Sarah on the show because the work that we've been doing, I like to take some credit out of it, which it's been really fun and really interesting. But before we get into all of that, you say you haven't got much to say on this show, Marcus, but you put in, for the first time I think ever, you actually contributed to the script of this show. You wrote one sentence, Apple losing the plot, I think was the sentence that you wrote.
No, that wasn't me, Paul.
No, it was you. I saw you write it in.
So the embarrassment starts already. Right, I'll try and remember what that was about, Paul.
It was about their new design. It was all this liquid design stuff.
That was the thing. Yeah, sorry. That's already passed me by. It's like, I'm at the point of I don't care anymore. So it's dripped out the back of my old brain.
By the time this podcast goes out, it'll be old news as well. Yeah. So, but it is really interesting. I mean, what a mess. I just can't believe it.
I mean, how many times people have said Steve Jobs must be turning in his grave? I mean, this one, he's rolling over, spinning.
Yeah, he must be spinning continually.
Such a shame because Apple, in the past, certainly in terms of accessibility, they've always been really exemplars in the accessibility space. And this almost feels like a step backwards for them as a supplier. So I'd love to know, certainly from the kind of accessibility community, what impact it's had on them as well.
I mean, from what I've been reading online, it's really polarized people because a lot of people have, you know, there's been a big group of people say, they're innovating, they're doing new stuff, they're trying to do new things. And yeah, that is true. I mean, it's not my personal aesthetic, but I can recognise that aesthetics change and that's good and all of the rest of it. But you just can't get round the accessibility and legibility. Yeah. It's not even, you know, when you think of accessibility, I mean, we've had this conversation, Sarah, haven't we, that, you know, people think about people that are registered disabled. And when we've talked about accessibility, it's always been about inclusive design. Mm. And it is an inclusive design problem. I mean, even people as old as Marcus, you know, he's really going to struggle to read all of that.
Instantly blind.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's no, you know, it's, I mean, surely they've got to fix it over the beta. You'd think that they would tone it down a bit. I don't know.
Who knows?
What I struggle with is that a company as large as that can, that nobody checked. No one asked a question. Surely because of what you said, Sarah, about they've got a fantastic track record on accessibility. Ways to assist users, use a phone and whatever. It's superb. So surely there's a massive department with thousands of people that do accessibility at Apple. And no, we won't bother with them on this one. Mm. We'll just go out and we'll put it in our, you know, in our big hoo-ha presentation. It's like,
yeah,
bizarre. Anyway,
I think there was also a big degree of, oh shit, we need to do something to distract from the fact that we're crap at AI. And at least it's got, it's moved everybody on from moaning about Siri, and they're now moaning about the state of the interface. So I guess, you know, different thing to moan about. Talking of AI, of course, you've got Johnny Ives now, who's also Apple, or well, used to be Apple.
The most world's most annoying man. But yeah, move on.
Why? Why do you find him annoying? The way he talks, that very considered
and
pace.
I'm all about design, you know.
Yeah.
I, you know, no one knows more in the world about design than I do. And it's like,
everything I do is well considered and thought through. he's all right. He's just a bit intense, isn't he? That's all.
So what's he doing at OpenAI then? That's not like designing fancy, shiny phones and computers and
Well, things. Apparently it is designing some hardware piece. We don't know. Ooh. There was the most awful video to introduce the fact that the two of them basically OpenAI's bought Johnny Ive's company, and they did this video where they met in a coffee shop, and they sat and basically blew smoke up each other's asses for 20 minutes, however long it was. But I am quite interested to see what comes out at the other end of that smoke being blown up their ass.
Well, I'll be honest, I'd never heard of him until you mentioned him. And fun fact, it looks like he and I share a birthday.
Oh, well, there you go.
So
great company there.
There you go, yes. Yeah.
You've got to tell us when your birthday is, Sarah, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
When's that?
When's your birthday then?
27th of February.
Really?
Much older than I am.
He's probably not much older than I am. Mine's the 28th of February.
There you go. I'm sure that means something profound, but I don't know what.
That's it. We'll end there.
Yeah. That's it. Done.
So that's Johnny Ives. I'd be interested to see what he ends up coming out with. Yeah, I think it will be, because it sounds like it's a new kind of device, and there have been a few kind of these AI devices knocking around that have been pretty ropey. But having some kind of AI assistant with you all the time, that the claim is that frees you from your phone, could be an interesting one. Yeah, exactly, Sarah. Sarah just pulled an amazing face at that point.
Unless it's a chip in my hand or something like that that's going to make my life easier, I quite like the phone.
Glasses.
Yeah.
Glasses. It's got to be glasses.
I know, but wearable tech, I don't know. I'm not sure I could. I do wear glasses, but I'm not sure I'd want everything coming through those glasses. I like that freedom to...
I know. You wouldn't want to drop them either, would you?
I've got a feeling it's going to be something... It's going to be something that talks to you in your ear. But the problem with that is that there are a lot of situations where you don't want to give verbal commands. So there seems to be problems there that I'm not quite sure how they're going to overcome.
That would just be like WhatsApp voice messages on like a massive scale. It would just be, that would be my absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't cope with that.
Anyway, enough of such rambling.
Sorry, before you, you get your bits very soon, Sarah, and I'll shut up. But I've got really important news, Paul.
Oh, here we go. Go on. Whenever he says that, it's the most trivial, unimportant thing you could possibly imagine. You've got a new detergent.
No, not that. Obviously not that important.
Not that good.
No. Headscape's newsletter is written, and all the people that it's going to be sent to is waiting to go beep. Once we just got to update the website, which will be.
I don't believe it.
By the end of Monday. It's ready. He's been nagging me for, 5 years? Probably.
Something like
five
that.
5 years to...
Don't call it a newsletter, mine, because nobody wants your news.
Of course they do.
And I know it's more interesting than just your news. I hate it when people have newsletters. Why would you sign up?
Yeah, but that's just you, Paul. I've got no problem with newsletter. That's you.
Oh, is it? Is it
a
me
thing?
Yeah,
it's a you
thing.
Oh,
I hate it.
Because I don't like courses. I don't want to be selling people, or not selling, I don't want to be providing people with a course. I find that a little bit...
Are you criticising my courses?
No,
is that
I think
what you're doing?
I think the content in them is wonderful, but I don't like them.
You just don't like the idea of it calling it a course. Yeah,
I'm just, you know, batting back your dislike.
So you see, what? You
should maybe do some research into it, Marcus. Find out newsletter blog.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. The done. UX person banging on about using research. We don't do that kind of stuff on this show.
Exactly. Yeah, basically, we talk about doing user research and then we just make it up. Oh no!
Just do what you want.
Right, I will start up. Go.
Okay. I try and share an app every week, and this one is a good one, right? I wish I'd known about this app, right? So I had a client, I won't tell you their name, even though it's written in the show notes, so nobody else say it, because otherwise I would get in trouble, and I signed an NDA with these people. In fact, I'm deleting it before you find it. There we go.
Damn.
Yes, I was quicker than you were, Mark. So I could see you had to. So this particular client, they had a form on their website, and they were asking for all kinds of ridiculous information. Like,
wasn't the University of Oxford, was it?
No, it wasn't.
No,
we haven't done this. It was, but they were asking for phone number when they didn't need to. They were insisting, they were validating the email address to make sure that it wasn't a Gmail or MSN or, you know, MSN. Or
MSN, cool, that's going back some.
Wow. I don't know where that came from. That suddenly popped into my head. You know, or, you know, it had to be your company email address. And it, all of this horrible stuff. And I spent ages fighting with these people about, look, you're tanking your conversion rate, you know, by doing this. And they were hiring me to improve their conversion rate. And at the time, I didn't know about this app. And so in the end, I had to split this convoluted form over multiple steps so I could see the drop off on each of the stages to prove that these fields weren't working. But there's this thing I've just discovered called Zuko Form Analysis, right? Bloody brilliant tool. It essentially will monitor every single field, how long somebody spends in the field, whether they abandon after a particular field, all this kind of, you know, it tracks visitors, number of people starting it, number of people completing it, how long they're spending on the form, all of this stuff to easily kind of compare. And it gives you right down to field level insights, you know, pinpointing exactly what caused people to abandon. And you can even dive into specific visitor sessions to see the exact path of what they were doing with the fields. Loads of stuff like this. And there's... you can actually try it out quite easily because you can get like 1,000 visits tracked for free, and that doesn't expire. So it's not like until, you know, 30 days and then they cut you off. You could try it up to 1,000 times to see the result. And then I didn't think this was too unreasonable. It's like £40 for 5,000 sessions a month. Yeah. Which is quite a lot, isn't it, really?
How does it work then? Is it you have to
create? I don't know. Magic. What do you
Fair enough. Yeah. Everything's magic as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
JavaScript, I presume. I suspect JavaScript.
Do you have to kind of, does it create the forms that you embed on your site?
No.
Or you'd be right. Okay.
No, yeah. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I haven't actually tried this myself. So, but I'm pretty sure you just add a snippet like you do and away it goes. So yeah, that's a really good find. I keep finding good apps. I've got a good app for next time as well, but you have to wait for that one.
Oh, how exciting. I don't know if I can.
I know, the anticipation's killing you, Marcus, isn't it?
It does look like you just embed the code like you would with GA and things like that.
Yeah. I thought this was quite a good one for you guys, actually.
I like the look of that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not too expensive, so you don't have to add, you know, another outrageous charge on top of my time. So, exactly. You know.
Well, you got that one in before I did.
I'd have to lose you, Paul, in order to get this.
Talking of Sarah, let me introduce where me and Sarah's working relationships come from. Because I predate Sarah, not that I'm older than, I don't know how old you are. Perhaps I do predate you. I look like I'm older, don't I? Let's be honest, of the two of us.
Absolutely.
So Anyway, what I meant was, is I was working with Oxford before Sarah joined. And what happened was, is I got approached by a small group within Oxford that really felt that there was a need to have a user experience team within the institution. Specifically within that, they've got like a digital transformation group. And so they asked me to put together a business case to, you know, for creating this kind of team. And Oxford's a huge organization. How big is Oxford?
Oh, I'm going to probably get this wrong, but I've got a feeling it's about 20,000 in staff and 20 in students, but I could be completely wrong.
Now. Yeah. That sounds familiar. Yeah.
It's huge. And due to the kind of distributed nature of all the colleges and the museums and the gardens and everything else as well, it's immense.
It's sprawling. And yeah, it's decentralized is a good word for it. You know, it's that you can't impose things on all of these colleges. You have to kind of nudge them and encourage them along. And so I sat down and, you know, we did some work to work out the business case and all the rest of it. And basically it came down to two approaches we could use. One is that we could build a UX team, a tactical UX team that worked on various projects. But, you know, as we've discussed before on the podcast, Marcus, you know, ideally you want almost like a 2-to-1 ratio. For every two developers, you have one UX person. And that would make the UX team absolutely massive because there are a lot of developers in the uni. And it was just never going to happen. You know, I knew I was fighting an impossible battle on that front. So instead, I went in and suggested we created a center of excellence that focuses on providing resources, providing training, helping other people do UX basically across the organization. And they, even then, I think, Sarah, you ended up having your team reduced from what I initially proposed was the bare minimum.
Yeah.
But that got through, got approved, and Sarah was appointed.
Yay.
And has taken over that team, which is created that team.
I was gonna say, I had to create it first before I could take
it over. That took a little while in itself, didn't it? I mean, where did you start? Because you had this kind of vague kind of plan that I threw at you, and then you had to get on with it. Where did you begin?
It was very much, first of all, obviously, this is my confession, it was a bit of a fangirl moment for me, because obviously I'd been following Paul for several years with his blog, newsletter, courses. So I had to obviously get over that first.
That didn't take long, did it, really? You only had to speak to me once.
I was going
to
say, we then had our meeting and all my dreams really were crushed.
It doesn't take long, does it?
There was a lot of reading. So as well as the stuff that Paul had done, Bunnyfoot had also done some background information looking at kind of the UX maturity of Oxford as well. So that kind of complemented the work that Paul had done. And then there was just all this kind of information that had been pulled together by the UX project team that had worked with Paul. So I think from that point on, I had that really good framework that I could kind of pull the best bits out of based on the budget that I had. And the first thing I kind of really did was create a plan. So I didn't want it to be a strategy that was kind of written and then dumped in a drawer and no one ever looked at. I needed it to be strategic, but properly planned, because I needed something to work from, because no one was going to write it for me. So it was kind of pulling together that plan, and whilst doing that, trying to, in the quickest way possible, pull together a team. So there was already somebody at the uni, shout out to Joe Talbot, who was kind of in post in the UX type role. So he kind of became my right hand person and started helping me recruit this kind of core team. And because it was so limited in size, we had to be kind of really quite circumspect as to what roles we took on. And although we then had our original budget reduced slightly in terms of bums on seats, as it were, the previously released head of digital accessibility project then merged into my team, because there was a head of digital accessibility, and essentially they didn't have anywhere to put the role, and I said, "Give it to me, give it to me." So that luckily then came into the centre of excellence. So as well as UX specialists, we've got this head of digital accessibility who, although is looking at it from a very strategic direction, is also great at the hands-on stuff as well. So that's kind of where we started, and then it was the planning. The planning then started, and having something in this plan that was measurable and I could tick off and say, "Yeah, we've done this, we've done this, we've done this. Paul said we should do this. Yeah, okay, we can. We've got the money, we've got the people, we can do this." So it was really, really good, terrifying in a way, but really good, because if those documents weren't there, I would still be 2 years behind where I am now. So
And I think you said something there that really resonated with me. I needed a plan and nobody was going to do it for me.
yeah.
And that's one of the things I love about you, Sarah, is that you're not constantly waiting for somebody else to tell you what to do. You just kind of grab the bull by the horn and get on with it. And I think there's so many UX teams out there that struggle because they're kind of waiting for permission, but nobody knows enough to give them permission. And so you end up in this kind of weird situation. I also think, while I'm praising you, that the grabbing the accessibility head of accessibility and bringing them into the fold, that was a really smart move that I didn't think of, because that with accessibility, you've now immediately got this legislative requirement that you can hang a load of UX stuff around. So that offers a lot of potential as well, doesn't it?
It does, and it just it for me it makes perfect sense, because it's like a really cohesive approach to users, essentially. It's just like, it's definitely H having Ben brought into the team was a real win for us. So that's kind of where we are now. So we've got a team of 4 UX specialists. We've also got a secondee in as well.
Oh,
So I've
cool.
been lucky enough to get someone in for 6 months who sits in another team. So hopefully, once she's finished her secondment, she can go back to doing what she's doing, but with a real UX and accessibility head on, which for us, if I could have hundreds of those coming in, one after another, it would be a way of repopulating the university with UX specialists. So
It's a really smart strategy. That idea of you bring someone in, you indoctrinate them, and then you send them back out to
exactly,
indoctrinate other people.
and she's
Like
brilliant. She,
missionaries.
yeah, it's exactly that. It's a cult. Yeah, no, it's and
You are a
she's brilliant
cult
because she's
leader,
she's got skills from her role as well that we don't have within our team. So she's working on things that we wouldn't have been able to do as well, and can create us guidelines and guidance. And now we've got that really good, or will have that once she leaves us, that good relationship with the team she works with. And so it's a work in progress. So we'll see how it goes.
So what does a I'm trying to think the pick the right time frame here. What does the average week look like for your team? What are you working on? Everything.
Honestly, literally everything. There's
All the
it,
things.
everyone's working on something different but the same. So we run consultancy. So primarily we work kind of in a consultative capacity. And everyone at the university, so often what happens is, obviously, like with lots of organizations, there's these silos, so you can only work for a particular part of the organization. Whereas at Oxford, we've kind of spread everything out on the table and said, right, everyone, you're all invited. Come and learn what you can about UX. And we can either upskill somebody in your team. We can run a training session for you. You can come to training sessions where we've got guest speakers like Paul Boag and people like that who come along and run sessions. And then we've got, for example, our designers currently working on a design system. So the design system at the moment, the way we want to kind of approach this is say to people, look, this isn't we're not developing a brand here. That's the first thing. This is not brand guidelines. This is a design system. So in order to help you and to encourage you to prototype things or create just some mock-ups, here, use this. And the kind of design system includes everything from, you know, hover states, look and feel, the stuff alongside it for WCAG, so the web content accessibility guidelines and things like that. So we do all of that. We do loads of training, try and insert ourselves in team meetings, conferences, everything, just from a really base level to kind of tell people what UX is, to like a much higher level when we're trying to kind of gain support for governance and things like that. I think, like Paul said, having the legislation behind us for WCAG is brilliant because, you know, you can try one route, but then it's, well, actually, you must do it this way. And yeah, this is kind of the route in. So, yeah, lots of different things. Primarily, we do a lot of upskilling. And again, embedding ourselves into project teams with certain members of the team to give them the skills to then go ahead and do something on their own next time, whilst always being there for them to come back if they need additional help. So, and working with, there's little pockets of UX excellence around the university as well. So we're trying to kind of work with them as closely as we can as well, just to make sure that we're all kind of singing from the same sheet, as well as trying to make the user journeys better, really.
The other thing that I think I really like about your approach, and to be fair, it was in my original recommendation, so I do take full credit for this.
I didn't read that one.
No, I'm sure you didn't. That was the strategy you were talking about that just sat in the drawer, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was my stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Is the consultative angle. That the one thing that I really drove home in the business case is, look, if you're going to have a team of half a dozen people, they can't be doing the work, right? And Sarah just so has got this and has really kind of fought to stay at that consultative level and that equipping and empowering level rather than getting dragged down into building stuff out, you know, for individual projects. So, yeah, the team's building assets like the design system, but that's for everyone, not just for one bloody project. So,
yeah. And that in itself has worked. You know, there's been one or two kind of quite high profile projects where, for example, our designers got involved in Nanami and she's kind of got involved but she's run them as sessions, as workshops, as upskilling kind of events. So from our perspective, it reflects well on us because at the moment, what's not there is data that shows the value of good UX at the university. And this is where we have been kind of got heavily involved in certain projects. So we can then turn around and say, look, we were involved in this particular project. This is the profile. This is the positive impact it's had. Please consider us more. So it's good for us getting obviously more people into the consultancy kind of process, but also just trying to get people to understand why it's important and just really, because for me obviously it's a no-brainer. You know, if you involve people in the beginning of the process and take them through it, it's going to be designed for those people, and it's just trying to make that relevance and that importance and that figure that you gave earlier about that two developers it should be one UXR is, you know, there's a team of five of us. And
yeah.
And like I say, there are pockets of excellence around the university of little UX teams, but they've got their own like organization to support as it is, you know, they can't be helping Tom, Dick, and Harry. So, I love it. I love the fact that we are open to everyone. And we've had so many different projects through the doors, which is just, it's so interesting. Just all the different things that are happening. So every week something different will come in and you'll be thinking, oh, I'd love to find out more about actually that. But think, no, step away, Sarah. I can't.
It's very easy to get pulled into the minutiae of a project, very much so. And it's overcoming that mental barrier as well, which is that if you got involved, the quality would shoot up. But it means that you'll spend all your time on one little thing. So there'll be one sliver of the institution that's got this really great experience, and everything else will be shit. But when you have that center of excellence mentality, okay, the quality overall is lower, for each individual project because you haven't been there. But you affect a far bigger range. And also, it's about knowledge transfer, isn't it? It's about other people, which I think is the big part of it.
And yeah, that knowledge transfer has been like there's some real advocates within the organization. So we set up a UX Champions network, and we've got about 150 people in it so far. And at the moment, it's like a Teams group. We go in, we discuss UX. Why wouldn't you offer our training in there and things like that? But there are some people that are really into their UX, even if it's not part of their job role. And the conversations that I have with some of these people, you can see they're adding so much value because they are advocates for what we're doing, and they're not afraid to speak up and like try and put the user first. So it's yeah, there is there's I can't see at this point in time any other way of it working rather than if we had a separate kind of tactical team that we could then deploy out to different projects.
And that community that you've created, I think that's an incredibly powerful tool, because there's something about if you bring these isolated people together across the organization and put them together, they reinforce and excite one another, which gives them more confidence in the individual areas. And that's where you get into the kind of culture hacking element of what you're doing, where you're actually beginning to shift gradually the culture of the entire organization by planting these seeds all around it. But I mean, Marcus is pulling a face at
No,
me talking
I'm
about culture.
just I'm just the word cult just came back in again.
A cult, yeah. We're back to cults again.
It's that
It's
proper
very
thing.
much like that.
No,
Perhaps that's where I got this idea because I grew up in the church. Perhaps that's where it's come from.
yeah,
Yeah,
it is
I can see now. I
my
see.
missionaries. Yeah, there won't be team members for much longer. But no, it's really good, and it's really good fun. Even just sharing kind of UX fails, for example, in the group, because I do have a terrible habit of screenshotting everything that annoys me and is a big UX fail. So a lot of the content is there is mine, not that I've created, but that I've seen. Even down to the toilets at a hotel we had a conference in on Monday. The icons they had on the door looked like a coffee pot and an upside down coffee pot. It just made no sense whatsoever. But people don't necessarily notice it for as a UX fail. They'll see it and think, well, that's a
No.
bit rubbish, but they don't appreciate like the impact it could have on
Yeah.
people. Just yeah, it's fun times.
My all-time favorite is where they have a handle on a door and then it says push. Push. So it's like two different messages, the handle is for pulling. Yeah, anyway. I'm talking of fails then. What's your biggest frustration been? What irritates you about, and has got under your skin doing this so far?
Quality of her consultant.
I didn't say that. I did not say that.
I've been quite kind so far, I thought
Just
so.
yeah, challenges. For me, it's I don't know. It's not being able to amplify our message enough. Not being able to kind of go to someone and say, right, UX is great, and them saying, excellent, we'll do UX now. It's that there's such a big institutional change that has to take place.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted it to happen yesterday, but I also love the challenge. I enjoy the challenge of getting people engaged with it and people coming out of sessions going, well, I hadn't considered that. Or, you know, that I've learned something today, and I've got a background as a teacher at times and a trainer and things like that. And that bit I do love, because that challenge of changing people's minds is immense. I love it. I love it. And that kind of goes along hand in hand with the accessibility side as well. It's trying to encourage people to take a step back and look at inclusive design and really consider everyone rather than kind of adjust everything to a process. So that, I think that's, those are my challenges, but I relish a challenge.
Yeah, you really do. And that, again, it's one of the things that I've loved about working you. You don't mind a good scrap.
I love it. It's so good, but it's so exciting. This is what I love about UX is like, you know, this last month we wouldn't have been able to talk about the Apple UI because it wasn't there. And
no,
it is. And
it's constantly evolving.
Something else is changing. And so, it's good fun.
So the way I talk about that challenge when I do my UX leadership and strategy course is it's a bit like, you know, getting a massive boulder rolling. That getting it going at the beginning is really, really tough and it's hard work. But once you get it moving, it picks up momentum and builds and builds and builds. And that's what I've seen in organizations over the years is that, you know, the impossible is achievable, but you've got to keep that pressure up to begin with to kind of get things rolling, which can be quite frustrating.
And I think that beginning piece, we're still there. I think we're still at that.
Yeah, you are.
As much behind it as possible to keep that momentum going. Otherwise, I could see it rolling back down that hill again. So,
And it is very much like that. And, you know, that initial period is years, not months.
Not months.
Like we would think it to be.
Definitely not months.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So, okay, then, to balance the biggest frustrations, what's been your biggest success? In my view, it was the time you dressed up as a dinosaur. but maybe not. Maybe that wasn't your biggest success. So.
I think my biggest success, I think, is the team and the advocates for UX. I think the team we've got is excellent. And it's a real mixture of skills and skill sets and things like that and personalities. And I think we're still very new coming together. But that and the UXers, that network of people that we've been able to communicate with and collaborate with, I think that the greatest success, I think, I'd say is teamwork and collaboration, which sounds really like
naff.
It sounds coming out of my mouth, but it is true, because there are so many interesting, amazing people at Oxford that every week I'm meeting someone different who's got a different point of view on UX and addresses it differently and either needs persuading one way or is a massive ally in getting this stuff moved forward. And so that, to me, I think the fact that I will talk the hind legs off a donkey and talk at anyone, quite frankly, that's I think that's probably helps for me, because I think I just wear people out and eventually they give in. Get rid of her. She's been in all of our team meetings for the last 6 months.
To be fair to the project group, I think that's what they did very well in appointing you, is recognize that was primarily a networking and influencing role, and they pointed appropriately.
It really is, and it's almost like a joke in certain circles now that she's banging on about UX again, and that I'm happy with that. I'm happy with
Yeah, that's good.
People moaning about me because of she's got yet another slot at the IT services conference and things like that. So it's like, how does she manage to get in there with like the most tenuous of links? But I'll find a way. I'll find a way.
And that's another smart.
Yeah.
That's another smart thing that you've done, which I talk about when I train on this stuff, is that whole area of you're also looking to build your external reputation, because building your team's external reputation actually gives you more internal clout as well. Like, for example, yeah. We're presenting with you, Sizer, aren't we? Next week, I think it is.
Yeah.
And so immediately that gives us a bit more gravitas and a bit more authority within the university, etc. Yeah. So those kind of opportunities are really good.
Oh, definitely. And I've been approached by people as well in small startups and things like that, because they've seen our content, they've wow. seen that we're doing all this stuff in Oxford, and you know, people have said, oh, you know, it was really helpful that you'd put this on your external facing website, and I've then obviously had a couple of evening chats with them and things like that, and just given them some help, because I just think from someone who spent a lot of time in the not-for-profit sector and that small startup space, if I can help somebody else that doesn't yeah. have the facilities that we've got at Oxford, then I'd really like to do that. And yeah. it's not to say I can help everyone, but something an old colleague of mine did recently on LinkedIn was he'd put a thing up saying, I've got two free slots next Thursday at 1 and 2 o'clock. If anyone wants any digital governance advice, get in touch. Yeah. And I just thought that was lovely. It's like just, you know, helping people that don't necessarily have the resource and the budgets to do so, I think is good.
And do you know what? It always works out from a selfish point of view, because I've always taken the same attitude. And, you know, I still will waste time, I'm doing air quotes there, with like talking to students or people really early in their career. They've got no, but because I did that since the beginning, these people are hiring me now because they've moved on and they've remembered that. And also, you know, you meet people that maybe you could hire and bring into your team when you get a headcount raise. And, you know, it's always worth it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had some work experience students come in as well, because I don't know why I would. I it's that cult thing again. Honestly, I'm just thinking, I want them to become UX specialists.
Yeah.
And it's like, you
Send
know.
Them out they, into the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They only came because they couldn't find anywhere else to go, but they leave wanting to be a UX specialist. So I think that, and we've engaged quite well with students as well this year. So
for the
first time ever, a UX society was.
Yes, you told me that. That's amazing. Yeah.
So hopefully that will continue in the next academic year. But that was, they had a hackathon and a little mini UX festival. And again, that was just as the result of a chance conversation with somebody that had spoken to somebody else and then said, speak to Sarah. And just that, again, engaging with the students is just so much fun. It's great to get a different perspective, because their view of the world's completely different to what mine would have been at that age.
Yeah.
They're like really fired up about doing stuff. And
I know, right? It's scary. They're far too competent.
Yeah. I know. I didn't want to do anything like that at that age. I didn't even know what I wanted to do.
You're this kind of relentless enthusiasm and this relentless talking and that kind of stuff. It is incredibly powerful. I mean, you know, I remember once, do you remember this, Marcus, with what's his name?
While you're thinking, I've just got, what's your dinosaur name, Tyrannosaurus UX?
Oh, that would have been so good. She's writing that down.
Writing that one down.
Yeah.
Sorry,
what were we meant to be remembering, Paul?
I was trying to remember that the guy at one time called me Snake Oil.
Oh, Mike. Mike McConnell. Yes.
Mike McConnell. I couldn't remember his name. What university?
Aberdeen. I haven't spoken to Mike for yonks, actually. He came and stayed at my house a few years ago. Lovely man.
Another time, I'm pretty sure it was him that said to me, how can I say no to you, Paul? It'd be like kicking a puppy. And you know, so that's
Paul,
what
at that point, Paul knew he'd got it. He'd got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, enthusiasm goes a long way. It's a big part of this thing. And this is like what I think a lot of people misunderstand about a UX leadership role, that actually you do very little UX in the sense of for end users, in your case students, but you're doing a lot of UX in terms of your colleagues, your stakeholders across the organization, thinking about their experience, their interactions with you as a team, and that kind of thing. So it's an interesting, really interesting role.
Yeah.
So what's the one thing that you haven't been able to do yet that you really want to do? What are you champing at the bit? Because I know what you're like, Sarah. There'll be probably half a dozen things that you desperately want to do.
For me, it is very wide reaching, and it's just convincing everyone that we're
just
not
convincing everyone.
Convincing everyone that we are not a blocker, we're an enabler. Yeah. It's that simple. I just want people to realise that we're not something that can be stripped out because they need to cut costs. We're one of the areas that they shouldn't be cutting costs. We're one of the areas that they need to focus on what the user wants and what the user needs. So I'd like to get an even louder voice with more people, I think
that is so spot on. And I think I'd go even a step further with that and say, we're not about blocking you, we're about ensuring your success. Because the trouble is that so often, and actually can save you time as well, because the amount of time things don't get adopted because they're shit when they come out of the door, or you know, or the project derails because it wasn't thought through properly in the beginning, and all of those kinds of things. So, you know, it really is. But you've got to the nut of the problem, haven't you? That there is this perception that UX is just more complexity to add into an overly complex thing already.
Yeah,
and that's why I really encourage people, and that if you're going to teach people to start doing UX. Don't teach them how to do a facilitated usability test session that takes, you know, a day out of their time. Teach them how to do a 5-second test that takes, 5 seconds, but it doesn't take more than that, but it's still very quick to do, you know? And that is what I've been so encouraged that, you know, you've really run with that kind of mentality. And I've learned as much about that mentality from following you guys and what you guys have been doing. You've been a really good project for me, if I'm honest, because I've never had somebody. No, that's not true. I want
to
word this right.
What you say is that.
No, I was going to say I've never had somebody follow through as well on what was going in my head. But it's more than that. It's the fact that I've got to see the journey with you. Yeah. Oftentimes I don't get to see the journey.
Yeah.
And seeing that has just been so much fun. I bloody loved it. I really have.
No, it's good. It is good. But it's helped me as well, because obviously there are certain areas that we weren't able to implement, but I've always been of the kind of thought that if there's a specialist brought in to do a job, then you should trust that they've done the job properly and kind of build on it in a way. So they brought you in and Bunnyfoot in to do a job, which was come up with this plan of how to deliver this this UX Center of Excellence. Now, if I get my bathroom remodeled, I want the bathroom person to come in, say, right, you should put that there, that there, that there, that there. And I'll go, yep, okay. And I'll have it that color. And that's it. I don't need
to. You don't want to second guess all of that previous work.
Because that's their specialism. And as far as I was concerned, you'd done literally done the donkey work and done all the legwork. And so for me, it was like beautiful. It was like, yay, there's a plan there. All I've got to do now is try and
work out
implement
how to make it a reality,
Yeah,
which is
exactly. Which is so
all I've got
exciting.
to do. All I've got to do. Like, that's the easy bit.
It's so exciting because otherwise, honestly, like I say, I'd still be there 2 years on trying to kind of formulate how to do this bit and that bit and all the rest of it. Whereas you'd come in and done that bit, and so I could then do the next bit. And to me, that makes perfect sense. Otherwise, it's a waste of your time and their money doing that.
So, Sarah, you
Yes.
said you're sharing some of this stuff online, you know, some of the lessons you've learned and you've been putting it out into the world. Where are you putting it out? Where can people find that? It's going to be a really long, complicated URL that's very unuser-friendly, isn't it? I'm going to guess.
You know, it's not too bad. It's on the end of another website. So it's staff.admin.ox.ac.uk forward slash UX.
Oh, okay. It
But
started
UX.
very long and then finished short.
Exactly. It's just the UX Centre of Excellence at Oxford should. If anyone wants it. And we're always after feedback because what we want is people telling us what they think about the content because we want to iterate as much as the people we're working with are supposed to be iterating. So if we create resources and templates and things like that, we want feedback because otherwise we don't know if they're working. But we would welcome anyone using any of the templates, and we're always adding new content, so that is great.
Can I just add to that that I
Yes.
don't want feedback? I've written a few things through it. I'm not interested in your feedback. Keep it to yourself. You
Yeah,
know,
I'll
take what
pass
I've
on
got.
the feedback.
So I've got a couple of things on that. Yeah, while we're sharing URLs, the one last thing I wanted to share is I'm afraid to say it now because Marcus is going to leap over me. This whole thing about UX leadership and strategy, I have turned into an email course, which you can sign up to at boagworld.com/subscribe, where, and to be honest, it was very heavily influenced by Oxford and what I've learned from
Hadn't
working with you guys.
noticed that
No, not in the slightest, I'm
at
sure.
all. No.
And talking of which, that brings us on to our interesting read for the week. And apparently, I'm interesting because I've picked my own article this time,
No.
which is very arrogant of me. But it was just so appropriate to what we were talking about. And it's called The Leadership Dilemma. And it's an article over on Smashy Magazine. And it really, it basically lays out the approach that you know, we've adopted at Oxford, of the dilemma being you want to have, you know, just to more work than you're capable of doing as a team, and how do you deal that? So I kind of lay that out. So if you don't want the whole of my email course, because like Marcus, you've got a problem with me, then you can just read the one-off article
Just the
instead.
word, just the word. The course is wonderful, Paul. And I've never heard you talk about these things before, ever in my life.
I'm a one-trick pony. Yeah, what can I
Oh,
say?
no, that's unfair. Three tricks, maybe? I don't
Well,
know.
my wife tells me that I have one use, and that's to earn money. In any other area, I am incompetent. She won't let me
Bringing
do
home the
anything.
bacon, I believe it's called.
Yes, but you know, I all that DIY stuff that men are supposed to do, she does all of that. She's far better at it than me. So there you go, one trick pony. Marcus, do you have a joke to wrap us up with? Oh,
I
Sarah,
do.
I'm sorry. You
Yeah, so I
probably haven't been
apologize now,
prepared for
Sarah.
this
Oh
trauma.
no, this is good because I'm just keep going back to Tyrannosaurus UX and it's like to be fair, I'm a Triceratops.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like that too.
Yeah,
Oh.
that's good. Yeah. So go on then, Marcus.
Right, here we go. When I was young, I thought rich people owned Bose music systems and the rest of us had Sony products. Turns out they were just stereotypes.
Oh, that is terrible. It's again, you get me with the puns. Every time it feels like a needle in my eye with these puns.
I'll try and get a good joke for next time.
Oh, yeah, that'll be a first. Do you know,
harsh.
We have tried many times to get rid of, I have tried many times to get rid of the joke at the end of the show. I think that is the one thing people won't allow us to change about this podcast. It's so annoying. But anyway, it is what it is. Hey, Sarah, thank you for doing this. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, yeah. Pleasure. I really like to talk.
Well, nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
And thank you very much for listening. I hope you found something useful in today's show. And we will be back again in another month. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.